You're very welcome, and thank you for joining us to hear some stories from a small town. This programme is being made with the support of Creative Places Athy and is being recorded at Athy Community Arts Centre. Our thanks to the centre, to Eilish Langton of Creative Places Athy, and to everyone who contributed stories. My name is John McKenna, and I'm joined by Mary Pat Maloney, Angela Kyo, Katie Jacques, and Alan Coonahan. Yarns, experiences, anecdotes, and memories told to us by local people. Stories from a small town is really stories from two towns, Castledermot and Athy. And it's in Castledermot that we begin.
Canon Cotter, a former parish priest of Castledermot, was the man to make you hop. The altar boys were terrified of him. The parishioners were terrified of him. The school children were terrified of him. The only one who didn't seem to be terrified was a knight of the road called Harry Tully. Harry travelled the highways and byways and often called to the parochial house for a handout or a bite to eat. As it happened, he landed at Canon Cotter's door one day, and as they stood chatting, the Angelus bell began to ring. Both Harry and the canon fell silent and blessed themselves. In a matter of seconds, Harry blessed himself again, his prayers over and done with. Eventually, the canon finished his prayers too. "You got through the Angelus very quickly, Harry," the canon said. "Much quicker than I did." "Practice, canon, practice," Harry said with a glint in his eye.
There were three abbeylands in Castledermot: the low, middle and high terraces. Most houses on the low terrace had the same style of gate, the only difference being the colours which each householder chose to paint his or her gate. The gate colours matched the colours people had put on the fascia of their houses. Anyway, one night, a couple of the low terrace lads were on their way home from a dance and got the brilliant idea of switching the garden gates along the road. And they did. The following morning, the terrace woke up to green gates where there used to be red, red where there used to be yellow, and yellow where there used to be brown, and so on. Returning the gates to their proper places was easy enough. Red fascia, red gate, yellow with yellow. No harm done, but a good laugh for years afterwards.
Jack Hickey lived on the low terrace. Renowned as a hard worker, a great footballer, and a very fair football referee, he was invited at one time to referee a Carlow County football final. He agreed and travelled on the set Sunday to the ground in Carlow. There he was met by the local parish priest, who informed him that the final had to be completed that day. "Come what may," he told Jack, "the match must be decided today." Jack was a bit puzzled by the priest's insistence, but agreed. The match was, to put it mildly, a fractious affair. Several players were sent to the line, and only with the greatest of trouble did Jack get through the 60 minutes of football and fighting. Only afterwards did Jack discover that this was a third attempt at playing the match, the previous two having been abandoned. But completed he had. Job done, up on his bike, and away home with him. Years later, and well into old age, Jack could be seen on the same bike, a lawnmower over his shoulder, heading for Colestown Cemetery or the Pitch and Putt Club to cut the grass. Never a man to rest on his laurels.
Mary Ann Doyle ran Doyle's Public House. With Joe Green behind the bar and Mary Ann keeping a close eye on things from her kitchen, the bar was a tight ship. Well run, and a place where messers were dealt with quickly. She made a living from the bar and employed Joe to boot. One of her lesser known sidelines was supplying altar wine to the Church of Ireland via the rector who lived just across the road. As Father Jack might say, that was an ecumenical matter.
The trimmings were part and parcel of the rosary in most houses, and the litany of the Blessed Virgin was part and parcel of what followed. I know in our house people found it hard to take the litany seriously, but my father never skipped it. You know the bit that goes, mirror of justice, seat of wisdom, cause of our joy, spiritual vessel, vessel of honour, singular vessel of devotion, mystical rose, Tower of David, Tower of Ivory. That was all very well until one night in the house when my father got to the bit that goes, Tower of Ivory. One of the boys replied, Rock of Cashel. I can tell you, my father was not amused.
At 3 o'clock, the bell rings and we burst from Mr. Begley's room like a broken vase, scattering in all directions. I let the others go ahead and slip down the laurels, the walkway that leads me past the drunken headstones, down by the back of Cope's shop and onto the fair green. And sure enough, the horse-drawn wagon with its bright and singing colours is gone. Only the neat circle of scorched stones and the cropped grass where the horses grazed remain as mementos of the family who lived here through the autumn and winter and into the early months of spring. I try to imagine what it must be like to wake up early one summer morning and know that the road has suddenly opened before you. I imagine what it's like to harness the horses and put them between the shafts of the cart and the wagon and amble out of the sleeping village into the rising sun, travelling all day, stopping only to rest and eat and feed and water those horses, knowing that tonight you'll sleep in another place and you'll be free. I know that some autumn morning when the leaves stop raining and the crows cluster on the undressed branches, the cashes will be back on the green. Their dogs curl beneath the flat cart, and the low canvas tent where the boys sleep will be in the shelter of a bush, and slow smoke will be rising from the chimney above the summer-painted sides of the wagon. What I don't know is that they will die young, from TB and pneumonia and winter dampness and malnutrition, from the ravages of the very freedom I so envy in them, the young suntan boys who sat in the desk beside me, the laughing beautiful girls with their heads of golden hair. One kind of freedom will lead to another. Oh, the autumn time is coming, and the leaves are gently fallen, where the wild mountain thyme grows around the blooming heather.
Oh, the summer time has come, and the trees are sweetly blooming, and the wild mountain thyme grows around the purple heather. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pull wild mountain thyme all around the purple heather. Will you go, lassie, go? I will build my love a tower by yon pure crystal fountain, and it's there I will bring all the flowers of the mountain. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pull wild mountain thyme all around the purple heather. Will you go, lassie, go? I will range through the wilds and the deep land so dreary, and return with thy spoils to the bower, oh my dearie. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pull wild mountain time all around the purple heather. Will you go, lassie, go?
Jack Fitzgerald was born in County Limerick and, for whatever reason, joined the British Army at the outbreak of the First World War. By the time it ended, 4 years later, he had seen things no one should see, and his body and mind had been damaged beyond recovery by gas and horror. By the time I was 8 or 9, he had washed up on the shores of our little community in County Kildare and was living in a trench, burrowed deep into the corner of an empty field, its roof a sheet of galvanised. I remember damp winter Saturday afternoons when I'd see him from the window of our house. I'd shout the news to my mother. Jack the basket man is coming. By then, he was no longer Jack Fitzgerald. His new name derived from the woven basket he carried on his left arm, a basket that held his means of livelihood. "Get away from the window and stop staring," my mother would say. Through the net curtain, I'd watch him go from door to door, and eventually his knock would sound on ours. My mother would open the door, hand him a sandwich and some change, and take the printed prayer and the paper flower he proffered. "Thank you," my mother would say, but the basket man was silent, always silent. As soon as the door was closed, the flower and the prayer were consigned to the burning coals of the range. And I remember hot summer afternoons when 4 or 5 of us youngsters would wind our lazy way up the turnpike and stand on the ditch at the edge of the field that held Jack the basketman's trench. We threw stones against the galvanized sheet under which he lived, half expecting the noise to bring the absent Jack shuffling after us. And later that summer, I overheard my father talking to a local guard, and Jack's name came up in conversation. "Sometimes he stays there for days on end," the guard said quietly. "It must be a killer, lying there in the heat, in the darkness, afraid to come out, imagining the bullets and the shells bursting all around him."
There was one hay shed in the village, right in the centre of the village. It was what kept the place a village. And then it was gone, demolished. I think that was one of the saddest things. It changed the middle of the village, changed from being a small country village to being something else.
When I was a child growing up, there was no running up and down to the shop for sliced pans or baguettes or wraps or any of that stuff. My mother and the rest of the women on our road baked bread every day. They baked it, not bought it. I remember my mother putting loaves of bread in the oven early in the morning. 2 or 3 loaves. There were a lot of us to feed, and sometimes other kids from the road would drop in to play and we'd all get a cut of bread with butter and maybe jam, and that was it. No sweets or treats, as the kids call them. A cut of fresh bread. And the other thing was that my mother would put out a wash 3 or 4 times a week and hope for good, dry, windy weather. Different times. Not all that long ago, but different times.
My father loved football, and he loved Castledermot, and he loved Kildare football. He'd be off around the country to matches, and we'd know by the way he'd walk when he got home whether Kildare had won or lost. If they won, he'd stride up the road. If they lost, he'd walk with the head down. And then he'd come in and say, "I'm never following that lot again. Never." And he wouldn't. Until the following Sunday.
Did anything ever taste as good as half-cooked potatoes and raw turnips that were stolen from someone's garden and cooked over a campfire down in the rocks? Nothing, in my opinion. There was a sweetness about that meal. Everything smelling of wood smoke, and the roasted potatoes with their burnt skins, and biting into the young turnip. Nothing to match it. And all of us laughing and skitting and thinking that we were somewhere out on the prairies of America.
There was a woman in Castledermot during the First World War who got a telegram to say her husband was dead, shot in the Dardanelles. She went around all the shops and pubs in the village to spread the news. And in most places, she was met with sympathy and a free drink. By the time night fell, she was well oiled. And as she made her way home, someone heard her saying, "I washed Jim all over in me time, but I'm damned if I know where his Dardanelles are."
Castledermot had a great horse fair one time. And I've 3 short stories for you about horses and horse traders. There were 2 northern horse traders at the fair in Castledermot one day, and they set up between what's now the chemist shop and what was the parochial house. They had a bag in the hedge with their money in it, and according as they sold a horse, the money went into the bag. And when the fair was over, they hit the road, each one presuming that the other had brought the money back. But neither one did. And by the time they discovered this, they were home. So what could they do? They came back to the next horse fair a couple of months later, and there was the bag and the money still in the hedge. The second story concerns a new priest in Castledermot. He was having trouble getting up on his horse on the square, and the corner boys were watching him and doing nothing to help. One of the Copes, who had just opened their shop at the time, came out and helped him up onto the horse. "I think you'll get on well in Castledermot," the priest said, "but I'm not so sure about the boyos on the corner." And the last story is horse dealers were known to buy early and then to clip and tidy up the mane and tail of a rough horse and resell it later in the day. There's a story that a clever dealer cleaned up and clipped a horse and sold it back to the man he'd bought it from, and the man didn't recognise the horse till they got home, and it trotted into its own stall in the stable.
I brought my 2 sons who had challenges to Castledermot School, and I met the principal, Brendan Dunn. And I got this vibe, something very personable about him. We were very lucky to find him and to find Terry Hayden at that school. The schoolyard can be a very tough place for all children, but for children on the spectrum, it can be hell and high water. Those 2 men went above and beyond the call of duty and their calling. I will never be able to repay them for the many, many ways and mechanisms they found to include my two sons in the school community. There was one particular instance. I remember going to the school one day when one of the boys was about seven and finding team sports tough. And Brendan called me. I thought one of the boys was in trouble. And he said, "I think you should get him involved in athletics. He's a real flyer, a great little runner. That just might be his calling." He got the hang of it. And from there on, things started to change. Brendan put together a school relay team and put them into competitions. And now, my son has an All-Ireland medal. Thanks to Brendan Dunn, we and he achieved things that would never have been on our radar.
And so we move 9 miles along the road and come to Athy, on the banks of the Barrow. A bigger town than Castledermot, but not so big as to have lost its sense of community. A town with its own stories.
When I was a child, I was given a week to live, but I survived. I had difficulties breathing, so my father made a bed for me and I slept on my tummy for 9 months. As I got older, I got used to being in a wheelchair. I was a twin, am a twin. It's great. We're really close. And I love my sister. We were close growing up. School was fine for me. I never felt I was treated differently. What do I think of Athy? I just love this place. There's not much in it, but I love it.
I grew up in Ballytor in Narramore. Life was quiet, too quiet. I went to school in Carlow, but I didn't like it. I had to get used to being confined to a wheelchair. I just got on with it. We lived on a hill and I didn't see many people. But I do now, and it makes life better.
I did live here, moved away to Dublin, and then came back here a few years ago. I had memories of Athy, but my memories were of quietness. That's why I wanted to come back. I can relax here, live a quieter life. I got the change I needed in moving from Dublin. I don't drive, so getting anywhere for shopping elsewhere can be difficult. But it's easier and safer here than living in Dublin. I'm getting to know people, finding a sense of community. I can see myself staying here.
I came here in 2010 from Nigeria. I wanted a quiet place to raise my kids. I had lived in Dublin and Wexford and Wicklow and Portlaoise. I needed to leave Nigeria, but I was sad too. I didn't know I was coming to Ireland. I like the quietness here, and I think the schools are much better in a small town than in a big city. The children get much better support and help. My oldest child is now 20. How did that happen? The children like living here, but I'm not sure they will stay here. They may move away. You want your child to have good opportunities. You don't want to cage them. So the oldest is in college in Dublin.
I was born in the county home. That's where most local children were born. I grew up in Butler's Row. I loved, and I still love, the town. When I was a kid, there was only one family of mixed race in Athy. As kids, we swam at Sandy Bottom. We had Kayleys in Dreamland. Billy Brown in the youth club looked after us and looked after my kids. One day, coming from school, I met a parade of elephants coming over the Barrow Bridge. Not something I expected. My mother was a lone parent and she brought four of us up. We lived our days playing in the ball alley. We'd walk to Barrow House. I loved the fresh air and countryside. As a child, I loved the freedom. When I was three, Miss Sylvester used to give out to us for playing at the pump. It was an outside pump for the houses in Butler's Row. I moved to Dublin to do hairdressing, but I didn't like it. I missed home. I wish we had something different in the town. But what I love is that the people here are great. It's not city, but it's not country. And people come together. Growing up, everyone knew my mother, so I couldn't do anything or the word would be home before I was.
I grew up on Patrick's Avenue. It was mighty. We had the plots at the back of the houses and the creamery. I never knew why it was called the creamery. We had all that. We used to head down the line to Ardree, and that was an adventure. And then we moved to Michael's Terrace. And my grandfather and uncle lived on the same street. The first houses with sewerage pipes in Athy. And Bradley's were in number one. They were related to us. In Michael's Terrace, there was electricity downstairs, but not upstairs. I remember once we had a party. Buns were being made. My parents were away on holiday. And while the buns were being mixed, some slug tocks fell off the top shelf into the flour. And there was no other flour available, so we said, "Ah, sure, it'll be all right. Won't kill anyone." And it didn't kill anyone. We'd rob orchards and then we'd put the apples into the old moulds at the back of the IVI, wrap them in straw, put them in the moulds and cover them. And then everyone on the terrace would have apples and pears for Halloween when no one else had them. I learned to swim near the railway bridge. 12-year-olds would teach you. They'd put their hand under your chin and put rushes under you to keep you up. And if your chin went into the water, the hand would lift you up. There was never any messing. And it could be 12 or 13-year-olds teaching you. And no one ever drowned. That's where I learned to swim.
We learned to swim at Penders, out the Barrow House Road. All of Park Breed would march out and we wouldn't get home till six. We were warned who to keep away from. My mother would take us, when we were small, out to Mann's, to the Moneen, to have a picnic. My mother in high heels, with a string of us and the neighbours' kids. 2 or 3 miles for a picnic. Later, I went on to nurse in Dublin, and we lived in the nurse's home, and I was earning £19.19 and a penny per month, and we had one day off a month. Athy is home to me. I was only ever out of Athy for 5 years studying. The freedom and the people. It was always lovely to come back home. It wraps around you. It's home. I can't put my finger on it. It's secure. It's home.
Thank you.
Look around you. You have the barrow, the canal, the walks, the freedom growing up. To this day, I find that freedom, the lovely walks, the lovely buildings we have. There was a guy delivering potatoes one day and he said, "Is a Tyre a rough town?" And I said, "Pick the roughest pub in a Tyre and I'll go in and have a drink in it and I won't be afraid to have a drink in it." And that, for me, is the thing.
I hate to hear people putting this town down.
I started keeping notes of everything I saw and heard from 10 years of age. And for that, I am now very grateful to a great tradition that is lost forever. There was no radio or, the curse of youth, television. In the winter, neighbours would gather round the fire. Dunn's tonight, Rainsford's tomorrow night, Anderson's the next, McAvoy's the next. The chat always started with current affairs and the inevitable, "Don't you remember, Jim, that something like that happened 30 years ago? Then the real debate would start. And we youngsters, supposed to be asleep, would learn local history. There was no beer drinking, few cigarette smokers, but generally it was pipe smoking. So much for winter. In summer, the women sat outside their doors. Many houses had a large whitewashed stone. Others brought stools or chairs. Then the chat would start from one door to the next, right along the row of houses, while the participants knitted, darned or sewed. The men sat across the road in the quay wall beside the barrow, fishing.
My grandfather went to America after his wife died, and his two sons were brought up by two aunts, one at one end of the town and the other at the other end. It was very sad. They didn't know each other really until they were in their teens.
My mother came to Athy to recuperate from scarlet fever to her nana who had horses. She spent time with horses in her nana's place and she told me once, "You'll know a horse's temperament if you look into his eye. You'll know if he's going to kick you or not." She learned that in Athy and she ended up working with horses, riding out horses on the curra. She learned the bookies tick-tack too, and when we'd go to Punchestown, she'd watch them signalling and wouldn't place a bet till the last minute after she'd seen what the tick-tack men were signalling.
New Library, Athy, 2018. Beside the flowing river, wind swept and wild, swans graze floating, willows weep down mild. Through the two glass doors into the sanctified space of this Dominican's dove, orbed halos of light from our electric age decorate a new library. And blessed be the dust that we see float lit by stained glass windows. Should we remind ourselves now through light and learning that once was written, in the beginning was the word.
There was a strike one time and things got very bad for the people involved. Food was short and there was damn all money. My father knew there were potato pits out at Mahon's in Prussestown. So one night, very late, he went out with sacks to get potatoes. But Mahon's had a dog that started barking. And between one thing and another, my father got caught. But here's the thing. An hour later, he arrived back home in Mahon's cart with not alone bags of potatoes, but sides of bacon. That was a kindness he never forgot.
And so we leave the stories and the storytellers. Thank you for listening, and my thanks again to everyone who brought a story to tell. To Creative Places Athy and Eilis Langton, to Athy Community Arts Centre, to Clem Ryan and all at KFM for their support. From Mary Pat Maloney, Angela Keogh, Katie Jacques, Alan Coonahan, Chris Jakes and myself, a very good night. And stories are our lives. Keep telling them.
Of all the money that e'er I've spent, I've spent it in good company. And all the harm that e'er I've done, alas, it was to none but me. Softly call.